qualitative inquiry refers generally to a complex field, almost a discipline in its own right, of a variety of different research methodologies and research techniques that persons in the social sciences, in the humanities, in education, healthcare, and so forth use, including case study, the interview, of various forms of ethnography, of participant observation, of various interpretive paradigms, such as feminism, cultural studies, critical race theory, various analytic strategies, various interpretive approaches to making sense out of, to formulating ideas about the way the social world is organized and has been given meaning by people in their ordinary circumstances. In the social sciences today, qualitative inquiry has often been referred to as a social movement that came out of the 70s that expressed an impulse out of the civil rights movements and so forth to develop methodologies and approaches to the study of human life that were more in touch with, quote, the actual experiences of individuals and persons, and to use research in ways that could forward various policy initiatives, various social progressive political agendas, such as we're involved in the Great Society initiative of Lyndon Johnson in the 60s. That model was a site for the development of a complex array of qualitative inquiry strategies that were then used by various groups and individuals, including women and the whole feminist movement, the elderly, Afro-American studies, critical race theory, and so forth. Various what came to be called standpoint epistemologies, the idea that no particular form of research could, quote, offer a God's eye view of the world, that there were only particular standpoints that we could use to take up to describe the world. So standpoint epistemologies became an important part of qualitative inquiry.
Now, when this field of study and inquiry developed, starting, say, around the 1970s, what was it reacting to, and how would some of these same areas or questions have been studied otherwise or previously?
It was reacting to decades of control in the social sciences by what was called positivism or post-positivism, attempts by the social sciences to mimic the physical sciences in terms of quantitative forms of reasoning, quote, rigorous forms of measurement, rigorous methodologies, attempts to scale social life, to scale attitudes, to scale various beliefs, and then to subject those findings to complicated statistical analyses. It was that quantitative approach which mimicked, as I said, the use of certain sophisticated methodologies in the physical sciences. That approach was reacted to then in the 60s by the qualitative research movement. It felt that earlier hegemonic control had really not been of great benefit to society as it attempted to address various social problems, social ills, instances of social injustice, and so forth.
Well, after about 30 years of this method of inquiry developing, are you seeing a backlash? Are you seeing more criticism of
there was
quality?
An ascendancy with the movement in the 80s and the 90s. Journals appeared, legions of textbooks, all sorts of new experimental forms of writing and talking about social life appeared in Britain, in New Zealand, in Australia, in France, in Germany, in the Netherlands, in the United States. Great success in terms of drawing new groups of scholars, previously marginalized scholars, into this discourse. As that occurs, a backlash starts, a methodological backlash begins to emerge at two levels at the same time. One, it's a political backlash, a reaction against liberal initiatives in the various governments of the West and so forth, and pressures towards an audit culture with greater forms of accountability for various initiatives that were sponsored by the state in terms of education, in terms of welfare, and Social Security, and so forth.
And maybe somebody looking at from the outside would say, well, you know, what's wrong? What's wrong with being able to look at information in a way where you can compare one to the other fairly easily? What's wrong with that?
Good question. And, of course, the answer is that it's like comparing apples and oranges. That methodology squeezed the world into a single kind of cookie cutter and generated just a series of sort of statistics or indicators that stood in some great distance from the actual experiences that were being described. Now, so as this occurs, the move towards evidence-based inquiry, which had been of some questionable success in medical research, gets imported into the social sciences and gets incorporated by the federal government as the model for judging whether research initiatives will be funded or not. And this evidence-based inquiry returns to a statistical quantitative model of research.
Can you give me a specific example, a specific case or something where this has happened?
Initiatives in educational research, studies, say, of school reform or of No Child Left Behind, what kind, say, of school culture or of the testing practices in a particular school or how minority students perform on particular exams, how teachers prepare their students for testing. Researchers are asked to draw random samples from schools which are very reluctant now to let researchers come in and do studies because they don't have time to allow researchers in because they're preparing students to take the exams that they're now being judged on in terms of the No Child Left Behind criteria. The model calls for schools to be randomly selected. Well, how can you randomly select a group of schools when the schools themselves don't want to be studied? So it's introducing it's ignorant of or not sensitive to the practical realities of executing, say, a random design in a piece of educational research.
And in the meantime, what is lost?
What is lost, of course, are the practical realities of the students and the teachers in that school engaging in the process of being educated and struggling with the meaning of any particular form of schooling or any particular subject matter.
Because it all comes down now to these exams, which schools now live and die by.
And they're now teaching to the test in many cases. And they're hiring consultants who are teaching teachers how to teach the students to score well on the tests. And that's what's happening. That's what's lost. So a great deal is at issue here. Not only are the schools not able to deliver the kind of educational experience they want, researchers who want to critically look at what's going on in schools today are really being prohibited from doing so because of this complex methodological set of protocols that they're being asked to adhere to.
Now, that's, you know, one field in one country, but of course you have speakers from, I think you said, over 45 countries. Is there a concern in many fields, in many parts of the world, that this way of research is being there's an attempt to freeze it out?
The audit culture with the evidence-based movement, England has just passed through it. They're ahead of America in terms of going through the movement. So there we have scholars from England now who are here today sharing their experiences with us as we try to struggle to make sense of it. It's happened in France, it's happened in Germany, it has happened in Denmark, in New Zealand, in Australia. The neoliberal governments are capitulating to a particular methodological protocol that's become the coin of the realm in terms of how they judge how they are going to spend the state's money to address issues of social problems.
I would think your critics would latch onto phrases like, you know, evidence-based movements and think, well, what's wrong with an evidence movement? What's the alternative to evidence, conjecture, and essentially try to paint you with that brush?
But, absolutely.
But that would be unfair, you would say?
Well, and Dr. Morris's lecture tonight on the politics of evidence, how what counts as evidence is itself a very political issue. It's not just evident. What is evidence? Further, in the medical sciences themselves, this model is now largely discredited. and only used under very specific circumstances. So that's an instance of a model becoming quite fashionable in one field for a period of time, then losing credibility there, but moving over to another field where it's sort of taken up on critically.
I take it this is the first conference of this type, of this scope.
That's right. This is the first international congress of qualitative inquiry of the scope such as this that's invited so many scholars from so many parts of the world to come and really reason together over the problems involved in what we call the global crisis in qualitative inquiry.
And it looks like part of the program during this week and also includes work on the formation of an international association of people doing qualitative inquiry.
Exactly. There's great interest from Latin America, from Colombia, from Argentina, from Brazil, from Mexico, from India, from South Africa. Scholars in those countries who are doing qualitative research have a need for an international association that would lend some authenticity and credibility to their projects. And that's why they're greatly interested in the formation of the society.
What do you think people in academia can do when they are facing people outside academia, in politics, in government, in funding bodies, who are skeptical of them?
Well, we feel that the formation of this society, or this international association, will give us a platform to speak as a collectivity in these situations when politicians and secretaries of education and so forth proclamate about particular initiatives, particular research protocols, the need for research here, the need for research there. We can speak up. We can step forward and say, as qualitative researchers, we've had these experiences in these countries when the governments have attempted to do this. These are our experiences. We have other recommendations, other proposals for you to follow if this is what you want to do. That's how we see ourselves operating.
So this Congress this weekend will only be the beginning, you believe?
Exactly. We see this as the first of what we hope will be an annual Congress, and we'll lay the foundation for the International Association of Qualitative Inquiry this year and formally launch it next year.